Accession number 31439, Mr. Tom Latham, Reel 3. Now, what happened when they found you? You know, there's this 3 weeks where you'd been sort
of... Well, it wasn't a lot, really, because there's nothing they can do. It just came on the list, and it was just a matter of that we was now put in the Essex Regiment, and more people come, we formed up, and it wasn't long after that before they shipped us to Germany.
So that would be when? Do you know the day you went to Germany?
No.
So, probably about April?
Possibly, yes. And we went to a place called Minden in Germany, in the barracks there.
Do you know the name of the barracks?
Yes, Elizabeth. I've got a photograph. Elizabeth Barracks it was at Minden.
Now, what were your first impressions when you got out to Germany? This is to join the 1st Battalion Essex Regiment?
We was all in the Essex now, yes. Because the barracks were so absolutely brilliant.
Tell us, why were the barracks so much better?
We'll start off with that. Triple glazed windows, because it was so cold in Germany, which was unbelievable. And they were just so convenient, you know, round the square, where they were just modern, you know, they were well above what we had over here. You know,
were they old German barracks?
Possibly, oh yes.
You didn't know?
No, because they had to be, didn't they? We went out in 1951, you know, they had to be, they weren't built for us. They were just brilliant barracks, the rooms were brilliant, you know, they were good.
Yeah. So what happened next then? What was your first impression of the unit? What did you think of the 1st Battalion Essex Regiment?
I don't think I had an impression. You were just in the army. It was just like carrying on training. The crowd of blokes I was still with, we were still all together. And it was just a matter of going on schemes and doing exercises and things like that. It was nothing outstanding, you know. We used to go into town now and then, but no.
So what were the schemes like, the exercises, or were they just the same again?
We used to go to, I think it was called Santa Lago or something like that. And
what were they like?
Just basically the same. It was more with tanks this time. And it was just a matter of digging in and getting dummy shield and smoke screens. And it was just the normal thing. There was nothing exceptional about it. Blank ammunition and then live ammunition. We had to climb under the wire, you know, because you had to keep your head down. But no, there's nothing exceptional about it, you know.
And what about when you went into town? How did you get on with the Germans?
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. Because being a non-smoker and I got issued with cigarettes, that was a boom. We go to a club or something and I used to give a few cigarettes and get a good table, because they all smoked except me. You get 50 free issue a week, you see. And that was a little bribe, and it used to work wonders. They just used to accept it, and you know, you get a best table and all the rest of it. That was a tip for the waiter, 2 cigarettes, so there was no cash took over.
And you just go to the bar and a normal evening out?
Yeah, oh yes, yeah, yes.
Now, you weren't with them long though, were you?
No, we was over there, I'm not sure, it could be maybe end of May, June, I think, we come back to Crowbar. I'm not sure them facts, like, you know.
So you're only out there about 12 weeks. It's not...
We might be a little bit longer than that. I'm not 100%. It can't be much longer. It couldn't be much longer. Might be maybe July. I'm not quite sure.
So how come you came back? Were you aware of what was happening, that you were going to go to Korea?
No. They just lined us up one day and said, you know, we're all going, because 3 of my mates never went. They said they were transferring us to the Norfolk Regiment, because the Norfolks were going to go to Korea. Norfolks used to be in Germany. They disbanded it virtually. And why they didn't send the Essex as one regiment, I don't know. But all our lot from the Essex went in D Company in the Norfolks. And 3 of my mates, they never got picked for some reason. They shot down all the office, tried to get onto it. They were stupid, but still. But they just couldn't, for some reason. And then we were transferred to Crowborough.
And that's where you joined them?
That's where we joined the Norfolks, and it was nothing but, once again, training, route marches.
So you were D Company?
We were D Company.
And which platoon?
We were 10th Platoon.
And that was everybody from the Essex Regiment?
Everyone was in D Company.
Oh, but not necessarily in 10th Platoon?
No, because you only had 30. 13 in platoon, you see.
So how many were there in the draft?
Oh, that I wouldn't know. But they were nearly all officers, nearly all SEF. You had a few East Surreys, the NCOs, well, NCO was East Surreys and that. But for 10th Platoon, so I knew them all. When we was out in Crewe, I knew the biggest majority were Essex.
And how did you get on with the Norfolks? I mean, you know, they're a different area of the country, but not that
well,
far.
Well, say we were still Essex.
No, the others, you know, the other men in the other companies.
You didn't see them? Did you?
See,
no, I'd have to go on to Crewe before I explain that.
Okay, no, that's fine. So so you were still, basically, as far as you were concerned, serving with the Essex, in essence.
Nothing altered, really.
Now, who were the characters in your company then? What about your officer? This is when you first meet them.
It was Lieutenant Keane.
You know his first name?
Tom.
And Keane's K-E-E?
Yes, N, yeah.
And what was he like?
It's all right. Yeah, no problem with him.
Well, I mean, can you tell us a bit more on that? Do you remember him as a person? You know,
No, they were aloft. They only met when they wanted something. They didn't mix officers. No officers mixed.
Was he a good officer, though? Having said that, I mean, did he know his stuff? What do you think of him?
Yes, I think so. He led patrols, and I don't know if I can go. No.
So, all right. Well, so, what about other officers? And who else?
That would have been the only one.
So that was your only one. What about your major commanding the company?
You'd never see them. You only see them when there was a general parade on the square. But other than that, no, you didn't have nothing to do with them.
What about your NCOs? Tell us a bit about them.
Well, this one, as I say, come from the West Surreys, and Willie Wilmot. Well, his name was Jerry, but everyone called him Will. And
and what rank was he then?
He was a corporal, all the time.
And what was Willie Wilmot like? Tell us about as a character, rather, because we'll talk about what you
Once
did together.
Once again, they didn't mix unduly, but he was a 110% soldier.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, if there was in a fight, once again, I'd have to go to Crewe.
Did he make a good impression on you when you first met him, though?
I can't remember. No.
Now, any other NCOs took your attention at that stage?
Not really, no.
Now, what kind of training were you doing at Crowborough?
The same as what we've done normally. We've done that in Germany. Nothing exceptional.
Nothing different?
No.
And anything happened while you were at Crowborough?
Nothing whatsoever.
So what next?
Well, we then departed from Southampton for Crewe.
What was the name of the ship?
The Empire Orwell. And I think it was the 28th of August. And we arrived the 28th of September.
Now, what do you remember of that journey? Firstly, what were conditions like on the Empire? What was your mess deck?
Oh, brilliant. That was the... Because, right, being army... I'm not going to say the word bullshit, but I've said it. You know, you had to... Everything spotless, which they did, you had to... Because my job on there was cleaning the floors. The bunks had to go up. We had to clean them. And our NCO was a different NCO, and the floors were clean. The food was out of this world. It was like a cruise. We used to do trainings, just shoot the brain gun.
How crowded were you down in the mess deck?
Oh, it's full up. Oh, yeah, it was, you know, there wasn't an empty bunk.
And you were in bunks, not hammocks?
Bunks, yep.
Did you do some training on your way out?
Yes. Once again, it was stripping and cleaning the brain guns in your rifle, which you already knew you should do. But it was shooting off the back of the ship. But other than that, you used to jog round the boat, and lectures. But other than that, no, because there wasn't the facilities, you know.
Were the lectures, what were they telling you about? Were you briefed it? Because a lot of people then didn't know where Crewe was.
Yes, we were told all about Crewe, what the countryside was like, and they told us that the positions we were going to, the Chinese never had no guns, but I don't know where they got the information, because they did, and all things like that. But, you know, they told you about the country, what conditions could be like, what the winters were and the weather was like. And
did they explain what the war was about?
No,
I mean, because a lot of people wouldn't know. So what happened? What about the route? I mean, were you seasick
no.
at the start of it?
No, not at all. No.
So what do you remember about the trip?
Well, it was good. We stopped at Port Said and was allowed to get off. We stopped at Aden, which was a terrible place.
Hang on, what do you remember about Port Said? Did you get
not a lot. Not a lot. It's just the bazaars and that, and you walked around, but not a lot. It was Aden was the place.
God, what was wrong with it?
Oh, that was disgusting. We walked along, we went in a bar, and it was filthy. And people, like the goats and the sheep, and they opened the front door, and they were coming out of the houses and walking them down the roads. And it was, they couldn't even see a blade of grass. We had to stop there for water. And when the ship pulled away to carry on a journey, we had to drink the water. Oh my God, was that treated? God, it was revolting, you know. Then the stop after that was, after Aden, was Colombo in Ceylon. Then
anything about that?
Yes, we had to do a route march.
Tell us about that.
Oh, and it was hot, wasn't it? And we had a sergeant called Sergeant Phillips, and he was a very big fella, and he collapsed, didn't he? And that fed him back on a stretcher. You know, he couldn't take it. But we had to do a route march there. And then the next stop was with Singapore, and I shot out and had a tattoo done.
Yeah. A lot of people have tattoos done then, and some of them regretted it. I mean, you've got two. There's one on the right arm. I can't see what that one is.
It's mum and dad.
And why did you have it done? You know,
why?
I mean, it's, you know, because nearly everybody did, didn't they?
Yeah. We went walking down there, and I was with my mate Alan Edson. We were walking down there, and this chap, Indian, was squatting down. There was quite a few of them, and he had a silk scarf with all these on it. Right, and I said, I'll have that one. Right? And he's looking at it, doing it, with a bit of bamboo and a split of razor blade on the end. And he's got his colours there, and he's looking at the picture, no transfer, looking at the picture, scratching it in. What the blood went? But of course, that's self-inflicted. So when you get back, you have to report sick. Or you get charged, because they can turn poisonous. If it turns poisonous, you get charged. Self-inflicted wound. So you take a chance, but never.
Were you proud of it at the time?
Mum and Dad.
Did you ever regret it later?
No, not at all.
You were happy with it?
Because that was Joni, her name was Josephine, but she couldn't spell it when she was at school, so she called herself Joan. So it's Joan.
When did you have that one done?
When we come back, we met up, and that was one of the camps I'd done when I was still had to do 3 years.
So that wasn't one. Right. Yeah. Okay. We'll come to. So that was Singapore.
Singapore.
Then where?
Then it was Hong Kong, which I didn't go. I was something I had to do. I couldn't get off the ship at Hong Kong, and then it was Busan.
And what were your first impressions of Busan? Because did you get this welcoming party?
Oh, the old Yankee band, Yankee Doodle Dandy and all that sort of thing, marching up and down and blast the noise. And it was just a matter of debarking and getting on a train. There was no messing about. We got on the train and I don't actually know where we went, but from getting off a station somewhere, we were put on lorries and taken like well beyond the line. And that's when things started from there.
So where did you go for it? Britannia Camp, I think.
Apparently it was a camp that the Ulsters had rigged up, tents and that, and I can remember it distinctly. We got there, and they gave us a meal, we kicked down for the night, and we're now in October now, and the next morning, you get shouted out and wake up, and you have to go outside, lined up with a towel and shaving stuff, and there was a river, and the sergeant said, "That's where you wash," and we had to go down. And it was a frost, and it was cold. And we had to wash and shave in his Persian. I thought, it started. And that's when career started. Having that first wash with cold water, it wasn't very nice. I was only there a short period of time. And then, can I carry on now?
Yeah. Right.
Only a short period of time. And apparently there was a battle going on, and the Northumberland Fusiliers took a hill. And we had to go up and relieve them. And during the day, it was hot. During the night it was a frost, but during the day it was scorching still in October. And now we're marching, we've gone up to the Aeslons, and now we're marching to take over from the Northumberland Fusiliers. And we're marching up this hill, and there was a river alongside of it, and we got the old gooks carrying with their A-frames, carrying our ammunition and barbed wire, stuff like that. And we had our water bottles, and you was only told when you could drink, because water was definitely rationed until we got in an actual position. So we're walking up this hill, and there's this river coming down the side. And as we're walking along, the gooks have took their packs off, and they're down there, and they're washing their face, and they're drinking it, and we're going, oh, and we're walking by, gasping, like, you know. We got round the bend, and as we go up, right in the middle of the river is a black Chinaman. And that water's going over him, and they're round the corner, they're drinking it. And I thought, flipping hell, he's black. He's gone black as Mugit's knocker. He was one that the bodies hadn't recovered as such, like, you know. And we took over from him, and that's when we had to start digging up bodies still to secure the position.
So where were you, which position was, which hill was it, do you know?
No.
Was it in the Koang San area, as they call it, near Hill 355 and the rest?
Yes,
of it?
Yes, it was all that to start off with.
Now, tell me about, what do you remember about this business about the bodies? Because there's pictures of it in your thing, yes, which we may or may not get copies of. But tell me about, was that your first job when you arrived then?
No, I didn't do that. But that Ron Horrocks is the one that does our Clacton Mill Sheet. He was digging them up, and they just had to be put in sacks and taken away. Like, you know, that's all they had to do was dig them up and put them in sacks, and someone else took them away. It just had to be cleared off the hill.
And these are Chinese corpses?
These were Chinese corpses, yes.
And what were the positions like?
Well, it took a bashing because it had been shelled and that. So the first thing we had to do was redo that. You've allocated a bunker. There could have been four of you in a bunker, and you had to make sure the roof was right. You had to make sure your firing position was deep enough, redigging trenches, barbed wire, and all things like that, you know.
Now, if we take those in order, I think, what about the bunker? Could you describe a bunker? It's a dugout, isn't it? But they called them bunkers period.
Yeah.
Now, can you describe exactly as much detail as you can that first?
Right, so imagine it being dug, if you could get it 6 foot deep, so you could walk in. A lot of them weren't, but we say 5 foot then. There were wooden beams going across the top, and there were sandbags put on the top of that. It wouldn't stop a shell, it stopped shrapnel. A shell would just blow to bits. And in front of that was your slit trench with your firing position. Some places we never had trenches go right way round, so to get to the next bunker you'd have to expose yourself until you took the position over, and then fresh trenches were dug.
Now, what was it, how big inside the dugout?
So just enough for a bunk. So some of them had was four bunks in, some of them only two. It all depends how many was
single
in that
or
bunk.
Double bunks, you
double
see.
Yeah, either side.
And were these all homemade bunks, or were they army bunks?
No, wood.
So how would you make the bunk?
Well, we set up four posts, all wired together. So you had plenty of telephone wire, and the telephone wire was also your mattress. You know what I mean?
What,
zigzagging it, tying all round? Yeah. But it was just the room.
Any other furniture at all?
No.
And so that was it. Any heating in there?
Well, when we said the sand, yes, we never, but some of them had fires, little petrol fires.
But you didn't?
We never, no, right. I never had a fire at all, no.
Why not?
Wasn't big enough.
So, now what about digging, what were the trenches like? Can you just, you know the trench in front of it, the firing position?
The firing position.
Can you describe that? I mean, how much like the formal trench, you know, with a fire step, duckboard,
no,
revetments?
No.
What was it?
If it's just a trench, maybe we say 5 foot deep, if that.
It's all right. About 5 foot.
Four to five feet. And that was it, just a trench.
No firing step then?
No, you was on the floor. And the brain gun or whatever, or your rifle, no. It was just that.
And these trenches weren't continuous, or not when it arrived?
Not, well, sometimes they weren't, but eventually they were, you know.
Now, what would you do to them? Would you? I mean, was 4 to 5 feet enough? I mean, it wouldn't be for me for a start. But
no,
I mean,
but well,
or even you.
Sometimes there was rocks; you couldn't go no deeper.
Was the ground difficult to dig in then?
A lot of it was, and a lot of it wasn't. It all depends what the hill was. If it was too bad, they kept the engineers come and blow it up, blow the rocks up, you know.
So you'd improve the dugout. Yep. You'd improve. Now, wiring was the third thing you said. So tell me about a wiring party.
Right. Do you used to have angle lengths of metal that was knocked in, and you used to use your pig stick or your bayonet, and the wire would go across it, and you'd have to put a loop in it and double it round with your pig stick to tie it on, and it went in a shape of a tent, right? And the middle you scrambled it in, right? So it was all loose in the middle. just rolled it all in. You just get through bowels and bowels and bowels of it, you know. And if it ever got shelled and it blew up, you had to go straight down and repair it all, like, you know.
And how thick was it?
Could have been maybe 3 feet. Something like 3 to 4 feet, depending on that.
In a pyramid?
In a pyramid.
And only one line of it? Only one barrier of three?
Yeah, sometimes we had two. It all depends what position you was in. Most of them did have a two.
Did two, yes, two because batches of
sometimes there was a minefield in the middle.
Now, did you lay mines, or was that a job for the engineers?
No, engineers.
Anything else you did to improve the positions when you took over from the Northumberland Fusiliers?
We weren't there unduly long.
No, you weren't. That's right. So it's just an early... Now,
stopover.
Did you settle into a trench routine there, or would it be better to look at trench routine another time?
Another time.
Did you actually see the Northumberland Fusiliers when you took over? What state were they in?
I don't know. I would say no.
Now, so what were you doing? You took over, you cleared the trenches, you improved the positions. Were you under fire in that foot? Nothing at all?
No, not at all.
And were you firing at anything?
No.
How could you see the enemy or where they were?
I hardly see any enemy. All the time I was out there, believe it or not. We used to walk on the skyline, but they never. Very rarely did you see an enemy.
And so what happened? How long were you there for? What do you remember happening next?
What I really can remember is that we went up to the Summerchung.
Now, there was a sort of big battle on the 5th, 6th of November,
that's where
Kings and Scottish borders. And the rest.
Yeah, we was on the position we finished. I think we was on Hill 238.
Now, is that before you went to the Summerchung?
Yes. It's all before the Summerchung.
So this position you took over from the Northumberland Fusiliers was a hill...
It was part of it, yes.
Was Hill 238, you think?
Yes, I think... I'm not quite sure my facts, but I've got maps, but I can't... a battle went in October that took 317, 217, and the November one was when the Chinese counterattacked.
Wasn't it on Hill 355 there was a big battle? I might have got the numbers wrong
there's quite a few on that. They all wanted that. But when the Northumberland Fusiliers attacked, I think it was the Cosbys and the, I'm not sure, the Cats Alive and the Royal Australian Regiment, something like that, took 317 and 217. That was in October. I've got a map here somewhere. And that's when, of course, we'd landed. We landed in end of September, and that's where we took over the position.
Right? So you think you took over Hill 238?
I'm sure it was 238, yes.
Because you didn't quite know before. I'll put that in.
So we could have been there a month.
Were you aware of what... I think you were there about a month, that's right, yeah. Were you aware of what went on when Speakman won his VC, the Chinese attacks, or was it just only something going on over there?
Going on. You know, shelling, firing, and it didn't involve us. There was a valley between us and that, and it didn't involve us one little bit.
Now, you don't remember trench routine in that period so well, do you?
That's what we'd done when we took over from Northumberland Fusiliers. It was just repairing a position, because it took a shelling, you see.
So you don't remember the... you'd rather deal with the routine of trench life and later on. Now, what was your job in the 10 Platoon D Company? I mean, what were you just a rifleman?
Just a rifleman, yep.
So you weren't attached to any particular thing?
No.
So what happens next, then?
Well, after the Cosbys lost 317, we got transferred to Summerchung.
Now, what was the situation in the Summerchung area?
Right. I think I'm not sure who we took over from. I don't know.
And that. You think that was Novemberish?
That was, yes. Yes. Mid to end of November, because we were there well before Christmas. It wasn't a big hill. We had the Welsh on our left, and in front of us was the notorious Hill of 169, which is the Chinese.
Now, is that the other side of the valley?
No.
Same side?
Same side, yeah. Just separated by the Semichon.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And then we had to do that patrol. That was the Semichon Valley. We used to have to walk, as you see, do that patrol.
We'll come back to that patrol. Yes. So what were the trenches like there?
They were pretty good. Pretty good. We had forward trenches, It didn't have to do a lot, just improved. No, it was a pretty good position because it had been maintained for a period of time, like, you know. So it'd never been took by the Chinese. So it was a frontline position that it'd never been shelled, and it was, we had a quiet time there.
Now, did you settle down into a trench routine there?
No, not really, no.
But you must have done. If you weren't doing anything, it must have been a routine trench life, if you see what I mean.
Well, there was, but it was back at what they called the Kansas line. Our position was a position already maintained. We only had to dig a trench once, and that was on Boxing Day.
By trench routine, I mean day-to-day life, waking up in the morning, getting your rations and things like that.
Well, it was a bore as such, you know. There's nothing went on. No.
So what I think we've understood, you misunderstood what I meant, which, yeah, is my fault. What we want to do is look at a typical day's routine in the trenches, and we know it's ordinary to you, but it isn't ordinary to people now or in the future. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So what time would your day start, assuming you weren't on a night patrol, and we've got a night patrol coming up,
yes,
but say you wake up, what time would a day start?
Right, are you ready? Right, you wake up, you get called up to stand two.
Now, what's stand two?
Stand two is when the enemy is most likely to attack at daybreak, right? So you woke up maybe half an hour before daybreak, you're putting your firing positions and you check, make sure everything's right, then you just got to wait there.
Now, is this everybody?
Everybody, the whole hill.
And what would your firing positions be? Would they just be...
Just be a trench outside your bunker.
So just standing in your trench?
Yep.
And looking?
Yep.
Everyone looking?
Yep.
And how long would that last?
About half an hour before daybreak. And as soon as you got daybreak, it was stand down, right? Except for those that was on stag. You had stag all day long.
Now, so they're what we used to call the sentries.
Yes.
Now, what was you'd do that then, wouldn't you, as a, yep, normal? What was a sentry turn like? What if you're on sentry, what are you doing?
Just sitting in a trench.
Not looking over the top?
Now and then. Because don't forget you had two lines of barbed wire and a minefield in front of you. So daytime, no one's going to come up there. So just idle your time away.
So you're more listening than looking?
Looking more than listening.
Ah, so you would look?
You would look over that valley, which was a long way away.
Did you have binoculars or anything like that to help you? So it was just
just vision.
So that's central. And how long would you be on and off? I mean, was there a rotation?
Two on and four off. During the daytime, it could be longer period off. But night time was two on and four off.
And was there a problem about staying awake at night? We might as well look at that one.
Yes.
How'd you do it?
Well, you nod off, and your mate, because there's always two of you, you give you a nudge. You know.
There'd be two on sentry at any...
All the time, yes. No one on their own. No.
So, right, so you're not on sentry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a stand down.
Stand down.
What next?
Right, so you had to go and wash and shave, right?
Did you have to wash and shave in the trenches?
Yes. Right.
Who said?
Just outside your bunker, right? You used to have to go down to get hot water from down below, which was boiled up by a petrol jet. You'd fill one up with hot water, one with cold. You'd come back and with your mug as well. And you have to wash and shave and clean your teeth and smart yourself all up. You had to be smart. And then you'd wash.
And that was insisted on by your officers and NCOs?
Yes, you was looked at, you know. You had to wash and shave every morning.
Did you appreciate why? Well, it's good for discipline and for morale, but did you appreciate that at the time?
No, I think you just took it for granted. You'd done it at home, so it was just a matter of washing and shaving.